Hi, I'm Femi OK. Today on the stream, the Climate Youth Action Movement, its evolution, strengths, weaknesses, and impact. Let's start our show at the UN Climate Conference in Glasgow.
It was very clear that young people are very worried about the future and they're angry. And I think they have every right to be angry because world leaders collectively over time have failed to deliver. Yes, we've made progress. Yes, we are bending the curve towards 2 degrees, but we need to go faster. And that's what young people are calling for.
Your panel today, Slater, Harriet, Nisreen, so good to see you. Slater, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our international audience. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Hi, Femi. My name is Slater Jewel Kemker, and I'm a filmmaker and the director of a documentary I made over 15 years following the rise of the global youth climate movement.
Looking forward to digging into that. Hello, Harriet. Welcome to the stream. Introduce yourself and tell our audience who you are and what you do.
Hi, Femi. I'm Dr. Harriet Thew. I'm a researcher. My title is actually COP26 Research Fellow. I'm based at the Priestley International Centre for Climate at the University of Leeds. My research focuses on climate change education and youth participation in climate governance.
Good to have you. And, wow, in Glasgow as well, we have Nisreen. Nisreen, welcome back to the stream. Always lovely to have you. Please remind our audience who you are and what you do.
I'm from Sudan. I'm the chair of the UN Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group on Climate Change. And as you mentioned, I'm talking to you now from the COP venue. You can see people running behind me. It's the normal COP thing.
All right. The normal COP thing, but the normal COP thing with youth activists added. What will the impact be of the Youth Climate Action Movement on COP26? That is our question. I'm asking that to you right now. If you're on YouTube, you can be part of the conversation. You're already weighing in. You already have very strong opinions. The comment section is here. Your opinions are very welcome. I want to start in 1992. This is Severn Suzuki at the Rio, the very first COP in Rio. Have a look, have a listen.
I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. Do not forget why you are attending these conferences. You are deciding what kind of a world we are growing up in. Please make your actions reflect your words. Thank you.
The Rio Earth Summit was the first time in history that world leaders gathered to discuss climate change and to try to put forward a plan for sustainable development.
Thank you for reminding us that we are responsible for the world and for the future generations.
Severn demanded an answer to the question, what about the rights of youth? What about the generation that will have to pick up the pieces?
Yes, I'm going to ask all of you about Severn Suzuki and where she fits in. I feel like that meme, this is where it started, this is how it's going. So this is how it started. Slater, you put that clip into your film. Why?
I feel like every climate activist at one point or another has had a friend or someone send them that clip thinking that it is current and happening today, saying, have you seen this girl? This is amazing. Are young people really doing this? And then it's always interesting because it's not from now. It's from 1992, 3 days before I was born. And I think it's a really important clip because it shows where we've come from. It shows that all along the way, young people have been injecting a enthusiasm and passion and drive into this conversation that so desperately is needed.
Oh, on YouTube already, we've got a really active audience today. Sasha Fofana says, well, they failed you, little girl. Nisreen, what do you say?
Well, I just wonder where is she right now, because I'm really looking forward to see the person she became. And unfortunately, as my colleague just mentioned, we are still in 1992. We hear the same things. Thank you for reminding us about the future. Thank you for reminding us about who's responsible, etc., etc. And I wasn't born in 1992 yet, but it I'm laughing now, but I'm crying actually. I'm crying inside because this is so sad to see that we're still there. times and years did not actually solve anything. We are still in the same spot we started in.
Harriet, go ahead.
I thought it was really interesting when I watched Slater's film that it opened with that shot of Seven Suzuki. I also teach master's students at the University of Leeds about the climate negotiations, sustainable development negotiations, and I show them that clip and have this conversation because a lot of people think that the recent youth climate movement, Greta Thunberg, is the first time we've seen this kind of thing. I say, no, there's been young people doing this for years. I was at the Rio Plus 20 negotiations in Brazil, so 20 years on from this clip, and Seven Suzuki was there, and she basically said she'd been invited back year after year to the UN saying the same stuff, and everyone always says they're so pleased to see her and to listen to what she has to say, but she feels like the message, it's always the same and it's not really moving forwards. And she actually said she thinks that rather than relying on world leaders, it's more important to look for the changes in our own local communities, which I felt like was a theme that came out of Slater's film as well. So it'd be interesting to hear what Slater and Nisreen think about that.
Oh, they're both nodding. Nisreen, articulate your nod first, and then Slater, you go second.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard because at this point, we really don't have any other options. We do activism or advocacy in different sorts, with the local communities, with the farmers, with the young people, raising the awareness of the public, doing the negotiations. I'm a party delegate. I do negotiation here with my country. We are doing everything possible in our hand to actually make this thing work. Unfortunately, we feel sometimes that whatever we do, we're just pushing a big wall that doesn't move. And some people call this climate anxiety, which is not anxiety. This is climate reality. The faith in the future of the whole world is in the hands of less than 200%. And these less than 200% have to make the right decisions. Otherwise, we'll all be under the ground.
Yeah. It's interesting having these conversations and these interviews. Even now, it still feels like it's a little bit of Groundhog Day. I can't believe that we're still having these conversations. I can't believe that we're still having conversations about why we're still having these conversations.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it comes from the fact that through the years that I've been filming this and speaking to young people and Indigenous communities and communities on the front lines, the thing that comes up again and again is this sense that how are we going to fix a problem within the society that created it? And I feel like a lot of that is not necessarily being talked about. It feels like the climate crisis is an existential crisis of who we are as people and how we are going to move forward. Like, what kind of world do we want to live in? Who are we going to be? What is our relationship to each other and the planet? And I feel like that part of the conversation is not necessarily something that you see at the UN climate talks, at COPs, this sense of how are we human within the climate crisis?
See, I have a theory, Harriet, and this is something that you've been studying for a long time, the impact of the climate action youth movement. And I have a theory that people see young people and they think they don't know what they're talking about, okay? And then in the film Youth Unstoppable, directed by Slater, there's a moment where Slater, is it okay if I call you a kid? She's a kid.
Yes.
Who got an interview, not now, but back then. How old were you, Slater?
I was 12.
All right, so she's a 12-year-old. The only interview this Canadian politician gave was to 12-year-old Slater. Have a look, and then Harriet, respond off the back of this clip.
Canada was one of the countries that had signed the Kyoto Protocol, committing to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But at the same time, the government was aggressively supporting Alberta's oil sands, the largest industrial project on Earth.
What would you think of putting together something where the youth and the adults are involved, something like a youth council to help shape Canadian environmental policy?
Well, we hear regularly from all kinds of Canadians, young and old, business and environmental, average Canadians. There's not a national consensus to be had. All the premiers from across Canada get together, and they can't agree on what to do. The four political parties in the House of Commons, the government opposition, can't agree what to do. There's also another 150 countries, mm-hmm. and we need to get them involved too.
Minister, we've got to get going.
You got it.
Thank you, Minister Barron, very much.
I thought Slater responded to that very politely. I wonder if she would respond the same today. It felt a little bit to me like he took that one interview because he thought, oh, it'll be nice, it'll look good to meet with a young person. And then she asked some quite tough questions. Well, not that tough, really, just can you listen to young people? And he kind of responded with, we listen to lots of people, like businesses and big environmental organisations. And it's like, that's not really the same thing, though, is it? They are already pulling a lot of the strings in our society. And I thought Slater did a very good job there of just politely shaking his hand. I wonder if Nisreen, have you been responding to people like that today, or have you been saying, no, I won't shake your hand till you give me a proper answer?
Yeah, well, it's yes and no. I had a speech today with more than 35 world leaders inside of the room with me, and I did a speech, and I suspect that they didn't like it.
Can I show a little bit of your speech, and then you can tell us why you suspect that the politicians in the room didn't like it? So this is Nisreen addressing COP26 a few hours ago.
My name is 47% of the world population. So anytime you meet me, don't say Nisreen, just say 47%, and I will understand. This 47% is only the people who are aged between 15 and 29. We are not yet talking about the people 30 to 35. We are not also talking about children, which is by far more than this number. So we are basically represent more than the half of the population of the planet. So it's not a gift, or it's not a privilege to listen to us. Actually, it's an obligation, because we represent most of the population of the world.
And just across the way, I just want to set the scene, was Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He mentioned you as he was addressing COP. You were surrounded by the great and the good. Nisreen, how did your message go down?
Yeah, so I also spoke about the coup that's happening in Sudan right now, and I tried to connect climate governance with the existence of institutes. And, you know, world leaders are a bit spectacle when it comes to talk about politics and ruling countries. For them, until now, for them, climate change is a soft landing issue where they can listen to young people, accept anything coming from young people in climate change, but you cannot talk about other things. And I will just be a hypocrite if I talk about climate change and COP26 and I feel isolated from my home and not talk about the issues that we are facing. How the hell are we going to have climate action in our countries where we don't have governments in the first place, when we don't have institutes in the first place, when we don't have a structure that helps us to actually tackle climate change in the first place? So nothing is disconnected. Everything is very much connected to each other. And if we just try to put it partials and partitions between topics, then we are just lying to ourselves. And we have to accept that. They have to accept that too.
Sada, I'm just wondering. Sada, you go ahead. I'm just wondering, watching Nisreen at COP26 at the table, what is that like?
It's incredibly inspiring. I mean, on the one hand, I feel like you are the most, you are the person within that room who we should all be listening to, not only just from the 47%, but because you actually are sharing the energy and the, it's hard to say what it is. It's passion, it's fear, but it's also a conviction that we do know what we're talking about. We are not only inheriting the future, we're living within the present that is currently spiraling out of control, whether it's fires or droughts or flooding. I mean, it's happening now. It's here. And we have been sounding the alarm for so many years. And thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to say, well, two things. One, Nisreen, can you get me in there with you tomorrow? Because I'm in Glasgow, but I feel like I'm at a completely different conference to you because I don't have a government badge. So we've been stuck outside all day. I may as well have been sitting in my room watching it on TV because we couldn't get near anything and we just had to pay £6 for a plain cheese sandwich. And the other thing is, when you're representing such a massive and diverse group of people, how do you get that message across? And do you find it difficult? I've noticed in my research that at the international level, young people kind of resort to this message that does cut across that whole group of we are like kind of that moral power of it's going to affect our futures, and that symbolic power of representing such a large amount of the global population. But by being this sort of model global citizen and not always being able to connect it back to your own experiences, that it can be a little bit easier to dismiss young people as not having that sort of real life experience and that vulnerability to climate impact that some of the other civil society groups are bringing in the negotiations that really capture people's attention with the personal stories.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. It's a very problematic for me. Every time I have to deliver a speech, I always try to consider all of the zones in the world, all of the different inequalities. Because I was speaking to one of the Swedish delegations here in COP, and she comes from the Arctic area. And when she was explaining how Arctic looks like, I felt like she's exactly describing Sudan, but it's so cold there and so hot in my country. So even within the developed countries, unfortunately, some areas are deliberately underdeveloped, where all of the goods and the resources of the poor areas goes to capitals like Stockholm, for example, or other cities and big cities. So trying to address all of these inequalities, trying to actually talk to every audience with their problem that they're facing, because it's very, very important to touch everyone's heart. It's a very challenging, and of course, as a human being, I cannot get disattached completely from the reality my country is living in. And as you mentioned, this is my human experience, and this is how I developed and became the person I am today.
Ladies, if I may, we have so many comments and questions for you on YouTube. I'm going to make this a speed round. React, and then we're going to move on, and then we'll do another one. See how many of the YouTube questions we can get to. Slater, all right. Bolly Bardo, this movement, in air quotes, OK, is an adventure jamboree, nothing else. Slater, go ahead.
That's completely absurd and ridiculous. It's not an adventure jamboree. I don't think anyone who is part of this movement wants there to be climate change so that we could be going on an adventure and, like, connecting with people around the world. What we want is a fair, ambitious, and legally binding deal that actually ensures our survival as a species and allows us to adapt and to not be losing not only the natural world, but the people that we love. This is a life or death situation.
Harriet, I'm going to give this one to you. This is from Amana, currently watching us on YouTube. What can you say to someone who doesn't know and doesn't care about climate change?
I think the best way to get somebody to care about climate change is to relate it to something personal. So I live in the north of England, and the way that I have done that when I've worked with school kids before is linking it to flooding, which is the climate impact that we experience the most where we live. So I think going in with things that people care about, people that they know, communities that they feel part of, places that they call home and they want to protect, is a good inroad. And then going from there to all of the other communities and people and places around the world that are impacted, and broadening their awareness from there is a good way to do it.
I have one for you, Nisreen. This is from Rashid. Rashid says, how do you see the impact of COP26 on our future?
Well, it's too early to judge. It's too early to say the impact of COP26 is XYZ. But I know that the impact on my bones, I'm not very well because the venue is super cold. It's a challenge that we are ready to actually overcome and wear the heaviest clothes in the world just to make this done, because it's only two weeks, but it will determine a lot of our future. So if you ask me this question again on the 12th or the 11th, I might have a more clear answer. And we are still crossing fingers and hoping that until the last moment of the COP, things goes well. So I cannot judge from now. It will be unfair to start judging things that did not start yet.
Guess I'm just looking at this. This is the Driving Ambition Youth for Climate Manifesto. It was put together last month. It's being presented this month to the people who make the decisions. Slater, when you see this and the way that you have followed the evolution of the youth movement, what does this say to you, this manifesto that has been given to politicians in power?
I hope they actually read it. It feels eerily like I remember being 15 years old and being part of a manifesto given to environmental ministers from around the world, and it ended up becoming a photo op. I don't like to think that I'm bitter, but there is a part of me, I want leaders to read this manifesto. I want them to take this and to actually see where young people are coming from and to move forward with those goals. But I am worried that it'll just be more of the same, because there isn't the sense of urgency. There isn't the same drive. We have countries that are representing their national interests, and that doesn't necessarily benefit the future of the planet.
Mm. Nazreen, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was part of making that manifesto. I was the co-chair of one of the theme areas, which is a youth driving ambition. And in our theme area, it was multilateral, national and local. And we were talking about how young people can drive the ambition on the three levels. And we had key three outcomes, which is a meaningful youth engagement. And why we said meaningful, because a lot of young people feels that they are just a decoration in many events. And this is something we really don't want to, because young people have professionalism, have impact and have ideas, innovative things, and they can actually solve the problems if people really listened and supported. The second thing was access into finance, because finance is a huge issue for everyone, even countries, but for young people specifically, because we at the end, we cannot stay mm-hmm. volunteers forever. We have to actually have our lives and right. feed our families. And also at some point, we need to step up and grow bigger our work. And the third one was capacity building.
We're going to end it there, because I have to show our audience a few things on my laptop. Youth Unstoppable. This is the web page for it. You can watch it for free online at Water Bear. You can follow Slater on Twitter, Dr. Harriet Thew on Twitter, and also Nazreen Al-Siam on Twitter as well. Thank you for your comments and your questions. I really appreciate them. Thank you to Nazreen, Dr. Harriet, and also Slater as well for bringing their perspective of where the youth climate action movement is today. I'm going to wrap up with thoughts from climate activists currently in Glasgow, in the room, hopefully at the table, making a difference. Thanks for watching, everybody. See you next time.
We have innovative ideas on how this climate crisis can be solved. For this matter, at COP26, I want to see our leaders recognize the contribution of young people and engage them in decision-making, programming, and implementation.
I think we need to shift away from this us versus them mentality when it comes to discussing climate change and placing the blame on adults and the older generation. I think it's more productive to have solutions-oriented conversations and focus on how we can move forward and build back better together.
The actions that are most important from my perspective that young people have to be very engaged in is policy formulation on climate action and being engaged in climate negotiations and climate conversations and decision-making at the national level as well as the international level.
What I want to see from world leaders at COP26 summit is to finally follow the science and be serious about their plans in order to assure that we can be within 1.5 degrees range.